You're listening to episode 157 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, bending under the weight of bad PR. Welcome to episode 157 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is September the 28th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my server-crashing brother, James Furlough.
Yeah, that's right. Server-crashing.
It's pretty much the only reason I'm here is because about 10 minutes before the podcast started, in the middle of one of the most epic battles in my Destiny career, their servers crashed.
Wow.
About 20 minutes ago. So I'm here for the show as a result.
Thank you, Destiny.
Hey, you know? Yeah. It's, speaking of poor starts for a company's launches, you know, it's just befuddled, I think is the word companies are dealing with.
What are you talking about?
Oh, I'm just talking about, you know, this is like the day that Destiny came out was the day that Apple announced the iPhone 6. And, you know, so they're both still in there. Everybody's trying to figure out, do we like this? Do we not like this? And they're not having the great, neither company is having the greatest week of their careers.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
From a PR perspective.
Yeah, we'll jump into that.
Destiny's getting beat up, though. It's terrible, man. It's like,
you can't have your servers go down. You know,
well,
EA knows all about that. Who does Destiny, by the way?
Bungie. Guys who did Halo. Yeah. I wish it were just their servers. There are complaints about the fundamental nature of the game, which makes me wonder, why'd you go ahead and buy it if you don't like what the game is?
Ha!
But I feel like I've been sort of on the peripheral of the gaming community for the last couple of years. Every once in a while, I dip my toe in. And you know what I've decided? The gaming community are a bunch of whiners. Like,
you probably just offended 3/4 of our audience.
That's...
Cheers.
You know what? See, this is the funny part is they're going to call me every – you're right. It's a valid point. And in my defense, I'm a whiner about just about everything else.
It's true.
How do you say? I whine about the rest of the tech industry and take everything super seriously, whereas, you know, video games to me are like, I just want to relax and kill some aliens for a while. And it's a fun game. What the heck?
So
it's not Halo. It's not supposed to be Halo.
So I've rediscovered games because I now have a phone that's bigger and better.
Nice.
I've been going back to the classic Jetpack Joyride. Awesome.
Wait, what's Jetpack Joyride?
Do not buy it and download it because you will waste hours of time. Okay, so it's that you got this little dude who wears a jetpack. And he's like, the idea is he's in some underground laboratory, and there's a bunch scientists and stuff, and he's like, you're trying to get to some mystery thing. I don't know. I've never gotten that far. But, not that far. I mean, I've gone like 3,600 meters, you know, which is, that's a good, yeah, I feel good about that distance, okay?
Okay.
But what's cool about it is, A, you can get different types of jetpacks, which is kind of neat. And then there's different types of what are those things called? The achievements things?
Yeah.
You know, where you have like little mini goals.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? They do those, in my opinion, they do it really, really well. Where they, you know, like one of them might be like, because they're like, there's scientists all running around, and if you have the laser jetpack, which is what I like to use, you kill them whenever you go over them, and that's kind of fun.
That's cool.
But one of them is like, give a high five to 50 scientists. So you have to like be running on the ground, and it'll just, you know, you actually hear him like clap as he runs by them.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's cool. And then when you do it, you get points, which, you know, allows you to buy other gadgets. Like right now, he's wearing a pair of sneakers where when he jumps in the air, he jumps really fast and high at first. So yeah. You can get over obstacles quickly. Then there's just weird stuff where it'll be like, die between 300 and 400 meters.
Weird.
Which is not as easy as it sounds.
I believe it.
Because there isn't always something to die at. And, you know, and he bounces and rolls. And that's the other, his little, another little gadget I bought. He's in a bubble. And so when he dies, he actually bounces for a little bit to get some extra.
I like those. I do enjoy those upgrade style games where you can.
Oh, it's so much fun. They've got these other coins that'll, you know, they go up and down, and you got to try to, and if you grab them, then you get a slot machine, and you pull the slot machine, and you can get cool stuff. Like one of them is a 750-meter blast when you start the game. Another one could be like an extra heart for when you die, come back to life, boop, keep going.
Nice.
But it's pretty fun. It's a good game. It was good on my iPhone when it first came out. And, you know, they've just been slowly adding it and keeping up with it, and it's a good game.
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, by the way, I'm just going to say it again, because I've started watching the final season of How I Met Your Mom, and you absolutely have to watch it.
Okay. You know what? I might do that this week. I might do that tonight. My bedtime story, right after playing, because that's kind of what my TV is right now. It's what I fall asleep to.
That's really good.
And although it'll probably be kind of weird for me with the whole I got a giant crush on what's her name, Ted's daughter, but like current age Ted's daughter, not late teenage Ted's daughter, like she is, I'm assuming, at the beginning of the TV show.
No, actually, she's the same age throughout the entire season.
Oh, the entire show, you mean, or just the
season? Yes, I'm sorry, show.
Oh,
yeah, apparently. I mean, it's, you will love it, okay? I'm just telling you right now, you will love it. For example, they did all of the shots of him talking to his kids right away.
The entire series?
For the entire series.
Holy cow. That's impressive.
So they're like, I mean, so think about it. Again, it was scripted out from beginning to end, and they were like, yep, we know what he's going to say to them every single time.
That's pretty good. That's impressive. Okay, I'll go and check it out. So... And you got to tell me when you're
going to... And P.S., callbacks are the absolute best I've ever seen.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to tell me when you get back into Breaking Bad, too.
Okay, I will. I think I'm just getting ready to start season four. Here's one of my absolute favorite ones is they're talking about, like, what are you going to be doing, like, a week from now type thing. And they're like, who knows what they'll be doing a week from now? And one of the characters goes, I will be sitting right here eating a lobster dinner. And you're just like... Okay, you know, and then they move on. And it's like the next episode, it's a week later, and he's sitting there eating a lobster dinner. And they don't mention it. They don't say it. He's just doing it. And either you catch it or you don't.
That's pretty funny.
And you get the type of humor, like I do, where you catch every single one of them. And you're just like, yes! And there's some stuff where, like, you look at that and go, they did that scene, like, 5 years ago. So that... he would look like that, you know, because it was like, you know, a shaved head or something. And you go, that they've just been waiting. They've been sitting on that 30-second clip, or not even that long, that 20-second clip for the last 2 years, just waiting.
All right.
Okay. I'm done.
But I'm gonna get the
promotion's
show going.
Promotion's over.
we've now fully gotten all of our advertising dollars for the show. this week, like every week, we're not gonna be talking about. How I Met Your Mother. Actually, you know what? This week, like every week, I guess we will be talking about How I Met Your Mother and technology in the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, where we'll talk about technology and not video games or TV shows, Jim's got a short disclosure he wants to throw it our way.
I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Cool. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we're all up in the social media doing our thing. You can follow me at Twitter. I'm at Matthew D. Furlow, or the Instagram. I'm NextWagon4, or playing the awesome game of Destiny. if you know, if there's anybody left who still likes that game, NextWagon4 as well.
I am James Furlow.
Cool.
Everywhere.
No ifs, ands, or buts. .com, that whatever. If you want to know more about the show,
yep.
It's weird when you do that. You can't, like, I feel like you got to give more explanation.
At James Furlow, jamesfurlow.com, James Furlow, one word, username.
I like to imagine we get one new listener every episode.
Fair enough. My bad.
So, anyways, if you want to go to the website too, we got one. It's cool. It's furlowbros.com. That's the web URL. You're going to have to go to domain name server to find out the actual IP address, but it's there. And then once you get there, you get all sorts of content, like our YouTube channel, if you're coming from the podcast channel, if you're coming from the YouTube. And all of the articles that we talk about this week, one of the services that we do for you, the customer, because we like you, is we put all of the articles we talk about, or at least links to them, on the website. So if there's anything you see, want to know more about, want to say to somebody, hey, you're stupid because of your opinion about video games. I'm actually feeling bad about that now that I said it. I don't know if you can tell.
As you should.
Right, yeah. What was I gonna say? Yeah, just go there. It's cool. Check it out.
So, in case you haven't heard yet, I got a new iPhone, and my wife has a new iPhone as well.
I have heard about that.
Hers is black on the front, more of a gray rather than a silver on the back.
No, it's space gray.
I said more like a gray, you know.
Okay, that's fair enough.
I left myself some wiggle. Jesse goes, not much. So, anyways, one of my favorite fun features with it is Hey Siri, which is pretty sweet. So essentially what that is when your iPhone is plugged in and charging, all you got to say is, Hey Siri, and Siri will turn on, which it didn't right now because it's not plugged in.
Right.
Kind of fun. At nighttime, it actually saved me a little bit ago because I was like, hey, Siri, what time is my alarm set for? And she was like, your alarm is set for 6 o'clock, and it is not on right now. And I went, really?
Whoa.
Hey, Siri, turn on my alarm. All right, your alarm is now on. I was like, sweet. It's kind of been fun to ask her, like, you know, sports scores at the end of the day. Hey, how did the Mariners do? How did the Giants do?
Have you not had Siri before?
Well, no, I have. I just, you know, when you got to press the button...
Oh my gosh.
I have seen the future, right? Okay. And I know Google's been doing it a while with OK Google.
Yeah, all of our Android fans are.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Welcome to 2012.
Yeah, well, whatever. I'm happy to be here, and it's a lot of fun. Maybe I should switch to the Android and get all this stuff ahead of time. Maybe.
Yeah.
I would like to know if there's a way to change the key phrase, though, from
Hey Siri,
hey Siri to something else.
Probably not.
And here's why. This should not come as a surprise, but my wife and I share a bed. And so I have my iPhone plugged in, and then she has her phone plugged in. And when you say, hey Siri, both phones respond.
That's interesting.
It's very interesting. They're not completely synchronized, but they're, you know, they're close. And
Do you get the dueling series going on?
No, because they don't tend to be looking for responses, you know. Every once in a while. But it was kind of fun when I forget one night. It was before she had her phone. She was watching a TV show in bed. And I was attempting to sleep. She was watching a show. And and they said something that sounded like, hey, Siri. The phone totally responded. It was like, boom, how can I help you? Or whatever it does. And then it goes, I didn't understand that. Like, you weren't supposed to. I don't
know. Go away.
Yeah. But yeah, with the two phones, it's a little annoying. I don't know how to get around that, obviously, other than you be able to change your key.
I wonder how Google gets around that, because it's obviously a problem.
Yeah. I don't know. But I would love a solution. I haven't looked it up. I'm pretty sure there isn't one, because the way it works. Yeah. So, but it's a cool feature. I love it. It's very cool.
Okay. Change OK Google. How to create a custom Google Now command for anything on Android. What? Go to OK Google. Huh. Interesting. Okay. It looks like. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand it, but I would like that to be able to be fixed because it totally has that Star Trek feel to it, you know, where you're just like, I could see where, you know, you've got your hue where you just go, "Hey Siri, turn off the lights." Boom.
Yeah.
Lights turn off.
That's.
I mean, and that's all that it is. That's all you'd say. "Hey Siri, turn off the lights."
And I'll be honest, that's the. If since you skipped over my article, I'll jump to it.
Oh, my bad.
It's perfect. I got excited. Segue. I know you were. That's part of what the whole HomeKit deal is. Or the idea behind it. I know that's one thing that is going to be driven to is, you know, the ability to, like, plug in your iPhone, power comes on, and just say, "Hey Siri, can you shut down the house?" And lights will go out, doors will lock, ovens will turn off, refrigerators will turn on, drying machines will engage, water fountains will turn on low. I don't know what else can you have going. Thermostat will
make sure your garage door is locked. Your motion sensitive lights are on.
Your pets are fed. Children are chained to their beds.
Your heater turns low.
Oh yes.
Which, by the way.
Or high.
By the way,
yes,
I'm not getting a Nest. What we decided was we'll buy the cheapy $25 one. We'll try it this winter, see how it works, if it actually makes a difference. And if it does, then we can upgrade it.
What's the cheapy one that's
it's
not
just
the
digital,
Nest?
Allows you to schedule it for like a week.
Huh.
That's all.
That's boring.
Yeah, it is. But it's $25. It's still going to be better than the manual move it over one. And, you know, like I said, if it actually makes a difference and is worth it, then we'll upgrade.
All right. Well.
But until then, I'm not totally smart home.
Well, I will wait until the future to tell you welcome to the future. Not there yet.
I'm still waiting for that Locatron, too. Ah. This future's taking forever.
All right. So basically what happens is there's a couple of dilemmas that you get when you come to the home. This the home for how the smart home works. And one of the big problems is all these different companies working on different protocols and stuff. Like you got your Nest, which is communicated a certain way, and you can build an app, and usually it has an API that you can connect with, but you know, it's not perfect, and or there's not like a central. But it's its own API. And then the Hue, for example, also it's got its own API. And then you've also got this. You got Locatron's got its own API. So all these different ways that you can communicate with these smart devices, but they're not all centered around something that's in the house. And so how most companies have gotten around that is you've got the iPhone or the phone, whatever, that acts as the central brain. But there's a dilemma because if you take your phone with you and other people aren't connected and they're not really working in concert because they're not cross-communicating. So, coming back to HomeKit, what is the point of this? It's to bring all these distinct things together. And Apple might be pushing out a solution for the center of your digital hub. And there's a couple of companies that have already built that, something like that. They're basically the Android-based little Wi-Fi servers that are supposed to sit in your network, and then you can put all the different apps on it, and it will push out a unified unified interface that will connect to your phones and stuff. So it just acts as a smart hub. Well, Apple doing the same thing. They've already got a bit of a smart hub in the middle of most houses, though. So they're just updating your Apple TVs with the HomeKit software built in. And nobody's exactly sure what this all is going to look like over the next year, but it seems like that's the direction that Apple's going, is to kind of put the Apple TV, which totally makes sense. It's a Bluetooth and Wi-Fi connected computer that just kind of sits in your house, and which is basically what all the other hubs that exist are, and it's about the same price point. It's pretty cool, actually, I think.
That is kind of cool. I wonder how much of that was planned versus that, you know, someone just had a brilliant idea after the fact.
Oh, I'm sure that's way more it than anything. You know, I think that seems like the sort of thing that maybe somebody had the foresight to think about that, but I got to believe that, you know, that was not, yeah, that was not a...
I mean, I know those kind of conversations will happen within HP, where you're working on a product and you go, we need to figure out a way to do this and integrate it in, and, you know, and someone goes, well, can we leverage this other product or software or whatever that someone's working on? And everyone goes, yeah, let's ask them.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what it was like. I mean, a lot, you know, there's a lot of stories of how innovation has happened at Apple, and that's a very common thing where the stuff that you think, you know, the App Store itself is kind of legendarily, you know, it seems like it was painfully obvious that that was the direction that the iPhone was going when it first was launched and everything, until you, like, read anything about it and realize that that was absolutely not the direction it was going. And it was actually a pretty big battle inside the company to convince Mr. Jobs that there should be third-party applications, you know, that ran natively on the device. And once they decided that that was a good move, how to actually implement that in a way that kept Steve and the rest of the execs happy was, you know, difficult to come up with. So, you know, it's I'm sure that this is the sort of thing, because if you think about how long it's been out by now, I'm sure they didn't have a cohesive plan. Right. But
yeah, that makes sense. So Apple TV is going to be the old hub, huh?
I hope so. It's funny. I've read a couple more articles this week about how the Apple TV, the actual Apple television set, it's coming.
Yeah, whatever.
2015, that's the year. The year of the Apple television. I think at this point I'm sort of on the side of, yeah, it's coming eventually, and we'll see what happens, and it'll be ridiculously overpriced, you know, but it'll be nice, and it'll be super high quality, and people will complain about it, because that's what people do. And just, I don't care. I actually am so much more excited by the puck, you know, especially when they do stuff like this. So
true.
Just my opinion.
You're enabled. You're allowed.
Thank you for enabling my opinions.
Cool. All right. I want to change the subject a little bit to semantic satiation. Which is when you say a word over and over and over again and it starts to lose its meaning.
Truck.
Yeah.
Truck. 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 Truck.
Yeah, after a while it stops meaning running fast. You know?
Right.
And so to truck somewhere.
Oh, trucking. I got gotcha. You. Keep on trucking.
Yeah.
All right.
So there's a Pando Daily article that's talking about this idea, and which is just kind of, it's interesting. But then, and we'll tie this in this way. He goes, "You could have been eating an actual apple while watching the Apple Watch announcement, and probably not put like two and two together this idea that like Apple is just a company name. You know, it doesn't necessarily have any, like, you know, they don't do anything related to apples. the fruit.
Right. The
fruit, you know, it's just, that's a name they chose. And so, he says there's so many situations where the original meaning is completely lost on it, but because some company has said it over and over and over again, it now takes on a totally new meaning that has nothing to do with its original meaning. Like, for example,
right.
And this is the fun part. He actually goes through a bunch of different examples. Think Virgin, the Richard Branson's company.
Yeah.
He's like, honestly, that was suggested to him when he was opening up his first record store in Notting Hill. And the reason that they chose Virgin was that they were all new to business. They were virgins, in a sense.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, but he's like, but, and it makes, you know, and we hear that, and we don't think that, we don't know about that, and it's like, if you use the word virgin in any other sentence, it holds a different meaning than it does for them. You know, they've been able to adopt a name for it, and in a lot of ways, this is called, like, branding, and your brand equity. How about this one? Cisco. They were named after the last five letters of their home city. San Francisco.
San Fran. Going to Cisco. I got that. I feel it.
Yep. So if you drop in that word Cisco into any conversation about, you know, tech kind of stuff like us, it brings to life a sturdy and dependable, or it brings to mind, I should say, sturdy and dependable networking equipment. You know? But anywhere outside of that, and you're left to make jokes, and, you know, you think about the city, or you know, you make jokes about the fact that, oh, you must not be from here, because no one else calls it that.
The city.
How about this one? GoDaddy was chosen because BigDaddy.com was already taken. Oh, man. Yeah, I love it. They say that name's been so played out that it's likely been years since anyone's been offended by it. How about this one? Jawbone was named as such because it was their first noise-canceling headphones relied on sensors that rested on your jawbone.
Mm.
But they don't anymore. But you know what? That doesn't matter because they're no longer associated with that. You think about a Bluetooth headset, you know?
Yeah, actually, I don't. It's funny. When you say Jawbone nowadays, I think about a product line that's about to have its be wiped off the face of the planet by the Apple Watch.
Yeah, very true.
It's kind of funny.
I mean, this is sort of like the whole, like, band thing, like band names. That's one of my favorite things is hearing weird phrases and thinking, would that be a good band name? Like, this is if I had to start a band... This is apropos of nothing, it's apropos of the conversation. But my favorite band name idea, and you're not allowed to steal this, Loose Nukes.
Loose Nukes?
Yeah. Please, welcome to the stage, the Loose Nukes. Yeah! It just sounds awesome. And
well, so it's funny, actually. What this person's, their whole point is they're like... irrelevancy to your name is okay if the name is catchy and easy to remember.
It's true. I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe
there it. There was, there was an early employee from Mint.com that eventually, you know, got bought by Intuit. They were saying, like, one of the reasons why they did better was their biggest rival, Wesabi. They're like, our name was easier to spell. Which I'm kind of like, and Mint, you kind of get the obvious association too, which I think helps. But yeah, anyways, I thought that was kind of cool. It was just kind of neat to hear where some of the company names came from. But again, it's this idea that, you know, you can create a company name and if you can repeat it enough and do whatever you do well enough, you can start to become associated with it, even if it's completely irrelevant. Or if it started out that way and then no longer is, it's okay. It's all good.
It's interesting to me because it's kind of a question of, like, it's the same question that comes with like titles and, you know, and anytime you're naming stuff, how do you go about naming things? I don't know. It's a tough question. How do you make something that sounds cool and, you know,
I make all my naming decisions based on available domain names.
Yeah, well, me too. I mean, that's the first thing I check, but still, you know. Yeah.
But anyways, thought that was pretty neat. Oh, and then here's a tip for you. I'm on a roll here. You know how, like, on the iPhone, and I'm pretty sure for Android phone it also works, you can have keyboard shortcuts where you type in a couple letters and it'll fill in the word for you?
Yes.
So this one's from Lifehacker here. You should create a shortcut of 2 @ signs for your email address.
Nah. Doing that right now.
It's brilliant, right?
That's a good... Yeah.
They're like, because it's not very often you're going to use 2 @ symbols in a row. And it's memorable because you're like, oh yeah, the @ symbol. It's always in your email. Boom, boom, @. And they're like, And if you have more than one email address, just create more than one @ symbol until you get to the one that you want.
Say, well, I think what I would do is I'd do like M @, C @.
Okay.
I might actually do that right now. I'm totally going to do this. This is awesome. That's a good idea.
Shortcuts.
I really like shortcuts. I do. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but sometimes whenever somebody responds to stuff, I'll do the Abed cool. Mm-hmm. Do 3 cools in a row, and that gets kind of boring typing it. So I've got a shortcut for it that's just CCC, and automatically comes cool.
Nice.
But that's shortcuts are fun. The best is when you go in and you change somebody's shortcuts to like. To something funny. Those are the best kinds of pranks. Just drive me nuts. Especially if they are able to send off a couple of texts without realizing that they're, you know, autocorrected. You do it just subtly enough. Change all the he's to she's. Just to really... Why is this doing this? Him's to hers. Yeah, you know.
Nice.
It's really driving me nuts. Oh man. So we kind of talked. I started to reference this earlier. But it was a bit of a week for the company that doesn't have anything to do with fruits, other than with their name. So you got your iPhone this week, mm-hmm. Yeah?
Well, last week. Jesse got hers this week.
Nice. Did it work the entire week? Phone calls and everything?
As far as I'm aware.
Is it still relatively flat and
so
level?
So far.
Did you have your stock value of your retirement collapse dramatically? A couple of percentage points?
Not that I know of.
Man, you managed to somehow be heavily invested in Apple by having to be your smartphone and not get wiped out by any of the tumbling Apple garbage.
It helps to be really, really busy.
Yeah, that does help. So Apple had a bit of a week. It's an interesting story in my opinion, because it's multifaceted. Obviously one thing that happened was the bend at Gate. Did you pay attention to this at all? So the bend gate, obviously, the concern is the bigger phones, you can get a lot more leverage on them. And a lot of people like sitting with them in the back pocket or...
Which is foolhardy, by the way.
Mm-hmm. And, they have skinny, cool jeans and you try to put it in your pocket and the phones, were reportedly at risk of bending. And dude made a video early in the week and launched it on YouTube. Basically saying, hey, I heard there were some complaints about phones bending, so I decided to check to see if it would, see if it would be, you know,
if it is actually bendable.
Bend.
So yeah.
So he busts out his iPhone and he bends it there on camera for you. And you see it bend, and then that just went completely viral, and clips of the video got onto the New York Times newspaper, and, It was all over the place. And then Within a couple of hours of that, Apple launched the first update to their iOS 8 operating system, and iOS 8.0.1 was the first update that was that would be pushed out to all the iPhone 6s out there. And if you had an iPhone 6 and got that update, your phone stopped working.
I heard the guy in charge of that update was the same guy who was in charge of Google Maps. Apple Maps.
Yeah.
I hope he still doesn't have a job. I mean, you're allowed one mistake. Right? You're too slow of a learner. They have a lot of smart people there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And then after all this, their stock took a bit of a pounding. And what's actually kind of... So let me actually make sure. So those are the big ones that happened this week. But it's not really all that happened, because they had some cool things happen, as it were. They sold 4 million iPhones in pre-orders. They got 10 million sold in the first weekend. iOS 8 went out to about a third of all devices, which is incredibly impressive.
Not mine.
But when you kind of...
Keeping my little guy... on 7 right now.
Why is that?
Because I heard it gets really slow and horrible on 8.
My iPhone 5 is working beautifully under iOS 8, but maybe that's not true of all phones. So on top of that, it's funny. When you actually like get the entire litany of problems, you get the celebrity, the nude photos getting hacked, which, you know, it's bad PR, but it's not necessarily Apple's fault. So you've got the botched iOS update. When you think about like the iPhone launching and the whole streaming thing just completely collapsing, and the unstreamable, which is funny, I kind of stopped thinking about it because it's not much to think about, but it's just from an overall how you want your super advanced tech company to look. You didn't want that sort of thing going on, you know? And then they're getting one of the big things is like the whole iCloud will break a lot of your documents, or your iCloud folder is breaking document usage. So if you upgrade to the iCloud,
Drive, which I was told not to do until I get to Yosemite.
I didn't do it either. And you're like, man, you know, it's just that one's one of those ones where you're like, that they should have seen that coming. You should have worked that one out and come up with, you know, a solution. And then the other one is, and this one I think is also unfair. The inability. No, sorry. Yeah. iOS 8 is one of the slowest install in recent history of all the operating systems, and
it's very slow uptake.
There's just not just overall the number of people that have iOS 8 up to date, which again I think is kind of unfair because iOS 7 was the biggest overhaul of the operating system in the operating system's history, and it was a completely new design, and it was one of the major selling points of the 5S was sort of like this new operating system. It's wicked cool. So to sit there and, you know, pound Apple for a slower update when that wasn't something that they like pounded, they didn't change. It doesn't look any different. Let's face it. It didn't get a facelift. I don't know. But the whole point is that...
Well, one of the things that we'll talk about in our business, too, HP talks about, is this idea that in order to grow... How do I want to say it? For every year that you grow in sales, it's that much harder to grow again next year.
Right.
You know, because you have to do at least that and then some. So, and it becomes particularly difficult when you sort of have an installed base that just kind of that hangs there, you know.
Yeah.
And so
they're happy with their printing.
Yeah, and so it's one of those where, And Windows struggles with these numbers too, right? Because they'll say something like, this is the largest, you know, opening day sales number, or the largest number of people converting to iOS 8. But our install base is also like twice as big as it was last year. So percentage-wise, not as good. But, you know, and that's just how that works. And, you know, part of it is you reach a certain set of people where you're no longer selling to the bleeding edge folks. You're selling to just, you know, your everyday people. And they don't care. You know, they're still waiting for their phone to, they'll see the dot and they just leave it there. They don't know what it means. They don't go, ooh, an update.
It's true. And I think, Tim, as far as I'm concerned, a big part of it is the reason I honestly think the biggest part of why it's slow is it was huge. That was what we were talking about, was the iOS update. Whereas this one was sort of like a casual mention amongst a large list of other cool things going. It was a casual mention. Most of my friends didn't even know that iOS 8 had launched the day that it launched. And it's the other thing that they did is that in the past, they'll normally not give out iOS 8 earlier, the new iOS early. Usually you update the day the phone comes out. So it's just sort of this massive rush, but it has caused their server networks to collapse a number of times. And, you know, they were trying out their new CDN this go around, but their content delivery network. But even with that, they decided to launch it 2 days early so that it wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't have any problems on their servers aside from just being overloaded the day of the iOS 8 or the iPhone 6 launch, which makes a lot of sense. And but the end result was people didn't even notice. There was no media hype for it.
I totally remember when I got my 4S and I went, you activate it, you know? And I remember trying to activate it, and it just wouldn't work. Servers was totally hosed from people trying to activate and register. And I think I even went to the AT&T store at the time because I wasn't crazy busy. It was like, my phone's not activating. They're like, yeah, just wait it out. It's like, all right, fine. And so
yeah,
I remember I was going like camping that weekend, or there was like a retreat or something like that. And it hadn't activated. So I was like, well, I guess I'll bring my old phone because phone's not activated. Yeah, totally on the drive over, it activated. And you want to know how I knew? Because my old phone stopped working.
That's funny.
Yep. And I had to bring it with me because I was like, whatever, it just doesn't work. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've always had issues with that because they're just not great at it, prepared for it, however you want to think about it.
Yeah, and you know, and so I think I think there was the massive media blitz for it, and that, you know, and just by virtue of trying to make sure it went well, and that's what happens. Oh well. But what I think is interesting here is there's just two thoughts that I have. I think number one, I am actually, so there's three thoughts that I derive from this, and I'll list them all. One, there's Apple's PR problem. They're having these legitimate problem. They're having a legitimate PR disaster this week, right? A lot of FUD, a lot of fear, uncertainty, doubt, a lot of people trying to manipulate the stock, whether it's, you know, Samsung trying to get people to stop buying their iPhones, or it's you know, the shorts market went wild as Apple was stumbling, and they're making tons of money, and they're doing their best to make sure that Apple stumbles as much as possible. And so, you know, there's this real move to kind of ruin the image of Apple right at their absolute peak, where a lot of people are thinking, should I get out? Is it the top already? You know, so it's there's definitely that going on. And Apple needs to be able to get back against that. And they're notoriously bad about fighting back against it, sort of ignoring it. And that was something that Steve Jobs was all about, you know, just ignore it until it becomes such a problem that you can't ignore it anymore. And whether it was the attenuation problem when Consumer Reports finally jumped on the bandwagon of Apple is, you know, Apple's in the middle of it, you know, their phones don't work. And, And, you know, Steve Jobs basically had to come back on stage and say, hey, nobody's phone works when you hold it in a certain way. And a lot of people point out that, yeah, but that's not what we were saying. You addressed a straw man argument. Nobody was saying that is not the case. But it worked. And it was a brilliant PR move. Because he attacked a straw man, but it was a close enough straw man that it allowed most people to go, oh yeah, well, of course you have to hold the phone. That makes it interesting. We're learning about physics now. What was the other one I had? I can't remember. But it's with like Apple Maps and stuff, you know, they came out and said sorry pretty quick, but they didn't really do anything that made people really feel comfortable. And it was a pretty bad problem for a long time for Apple, you know? And fair or not, it's the simple truth is you got it. That's the whole thing with PR is it's about having bad stories go the right way and good stories go the right way, you know? And because they can go any way.
Very true.
This is going to be my point. So iOS 8.0.1 was terrible from you can't do that as a company. You just can't do that. I'm really curious, and I hope people will tell us why it broke down, what it was that they launched that was so disastrous. The simple truth of the matter is my interest is, you know, besides the point when it comes to how they deal with it. But then there's the bending of the phones that you just... This is such a mistake, and just Apple let that one get way too many legs, way too much of you know, momentum. And the best part about it is it's the classic, you know, truth will get halfway around the world a lie will get halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to put its pants on, you know. And basically what happens is, number one, all phones are bendable, big, small, or whatever. And the bigger the phone is, the easier it is to bend because you can get better leverage on it. That's simply true. Okay, we can acknowledge that. So the two questions that you have to ask is the iPhone worse than other phones, A? And B, is it going to get bent under normal circumstances? Do I have to change how I use the phone in order to protect it? Which is funny, when it came to the screen scratching, that drove everybody nuts, but we all adjusted to that. We said, yeah, I have to change my usage so that the screen doesn't get scratched. I need to put a cover on it. I need to do this. I need to do that. And I sit here and I go, I think that's kind of what the message that needed to get out, if that's a problem. But the thing is that I think it's been, you know, so obviously everybody's like, oh my gosh, the phone bends, this is terrible. The dude who made the video, he actually made a follow-up video where he kind of tried to bend other phones, and he showed that other phones were hard to bend. You know, he couldn't really make it I couldn't really make these other phones bend, but some of them were flexible. You know, it's just different because they're plastic versus the aluminum, whatever. So he's trying to be fair, I guess. And then it comes out that it's like Apple finally, after too many days, came back and were like, look, we do huge amounts of like stress testing on these things. Like, they allowed the PR machine, slowly but surely, started to get its legs underneath it. And they had them come, they had a bunch of different journalists come, and actually, like, they opened up the doors to the testing facilities so they could see all the different stress testing that was going on. And they told them, look, they're designed to be able to survive these conditions and that condition. These are normal conditions that these things are designed to be able to go through. Like, look, we did our homework. The thing's not going to get bent on you. And then they were also like, oh, and BT Dubs, in the last week of selling the phones, in where we've sold 15 million of them, 9 people have come back to us and said, yeah, the phone bent when I use it. And guess what? We replaced all 9 of them. That's like, you have way more of a chance of getting struck by lightning on your way to the Apple store than you do having a bent iPhone. It's ridiculous. This is just craziness that anybody's worried about this. And yeah, guess what? All phones break if you bend them too hard. And it's funny, one of the things that, you know, for me, when I first read this, I remember I got, in my younger, more less mature days, I got angry at one point and took a phone and snapped it in half. Granted, it wasn't an iPhone, but it's like, phones break pretty easily. They're not exactly designed to you know, to withhold a lot of force. And what's great about it is,
and flip phones broke all the time.
Oh yeah, those were actually really easy to break because they had a hinge point. But what was interesting is Consumer Reports, who oftentimes would they became either friend or enemy during the whole AntennaGate thing. They came out on Apple's side this time. They set up their little test rig. They're basically like, look, it kind of falls in the middle of between a couple of different phones. That some phones break at, you know, same size phones break at less weight. Some phones break at more weight, but it still takes like 90 pounds to break it. And then they did the pencil test, which I thought that's interesting that this is like a standard way of conveying to people how strong something is. But they said, how many pencils does it take, or how many pencils is this equivalent to? You know, is it one pencil? It takes how many pounds to break one pencil? Is it two pencils? Is it three pencils? Well, it's a little bit less than four pencils is how it goes. So if you grab four number two pencils and you try to flex them as hard as you can and break it, that's what it's like trying to break an iPhone 6 Plus, which is kind of impressive.
Which, again, we're not talking about snapping it either. We're talking about to create a noticeable bend.
Permanently deforming it and bending it. It takes a tremendous amount of force to do that. It's very difficult to do with your bare hands. I'm a pretty strong dude, and I would have a hard time.
Man, I wish we had some pencils. I want to see you try.
I know. I love how you're looking around for pencils. You know, a state and a half.
I would have tried it.
Yeah. but this is the most compelling thing that I think is really, really interesting, and somebody else pointed this out to me, and I think Apple should have taken this and just run with it. But the YouTube video, when he actually picks up the phone, he shows the times. He at some point hits the home button, and the time comes on. You actually see the time, and you see it in two different cases. You see it once while he's bending the phone, and once at the end of the video, when he's showing the bent phone. And the bent phone, when he's showing you the bent phone, it's a little bit before 2 p.m. And when he's bending the phone, it's about 20 minutes after 2. In other words, he recorded the footage of the bent phone before he recorded the video of him bending the phone. Now, I'm not sure how that happens. Did he have two phones? It's pretty obvious that he had at least two different cameras, but my guess is just because of how the thing went, he filmed one camera and never moved for when he was the before and the after. And then you're supposed to have it, and just because of how it was filmed and everything, it's supposed to be implied that there's a camera above him actually showing him flexing the phone, and which he very well might have. But it's just really obvious after you watching the video a couple of times that the way it's all cut together is not the actual way that he went about bending the phone. And I'm not saying that the phone's not bent, because I was trying to tell one of my friends, they're like, well, I saw the video. The phone's clearly bent, and the phones are bendable. It's not like they never break. I was like, yeah, but that's not the point. The point is what he wanted to show was him bending the phone with his bare hands. And have you ever watched those videos of the dudes that like bend spoons with their minds, or they bend the keys with their minds? It's basically a magic trick, and it's really, really interesting. I don't know why I get into the weirdest things. I don't know why, but I got really into it probably during high school, learning about how they do that in magic, because it's not, you know, or you know, it's as an illusion. It's an illusion, Dad. I should go watch Arrested Development again. That is a great show.
No. But, I met your mom first.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. But the whole deal was that what they would do is they'd show you a straight pencil, then they would do some sort of distract you. You know, don't look at the hand of the spoon. Look at my other hand. While they would bend the spoon. And then what they do is they show you the spoon again, and they start rubbing on it. And then as they change the angle of the spoon, the bend that they put in while you weren't paying attention becomes apparent, or something along that lines. And basically what it is it allows you to do that trick on stage. There's a couple of different ways to do it, but that's the big one. But my point is that I have a really hard time believing that he just sat there and bent the phone with his bare hands. And this is my guess. Is either he put a nick in the phone to give it a structural weakness, or he actually, you know, used some – because I had a friend who's like, who looked at it like, it looks perfectly straight to me when he starts. I was like, yeah, because that's so hard to make a phone look straight with a graphics program, you know, like After Effects in 20 minutes while you make the video. And everybody was looking at me like, why would you do that though? The video is 23 million views. It was mentioned in the New York Times. Do you have any idea how much money that's worth for a dude with a YouTube channel? I mean, it is actually – it's almost so smart to do that you wonder why, like, you don't do that. Why don't we do that? And that's when we come to the really important part of this conversation, James. I want to get an Apple Watch when it first comes out and make a video of it burning, like, causing rashes right where the wrist is. So I think I've legitimately, and if you just do exactly the same format that he did. So you guys have heard a lot of the reports and rumors, I guess, probably by this point, of rashes from the Apple Watch. And I just wanted to show you what it's like and do some fake stupid test where you like show like the temperatures of the sensor or something. I don't know. Come up with something so that you can make like a little 5-minute video showing obviously the Apple Watch is the worst thing that's ever happened to humanity and it's going to fail as a device. And then a week later, Apple's going to have to come back and go, that guy's a jerk. Just don't listen to him. By that point, we'll be running away with our fake internet dollars and our YouTube videos, all of our new subscribers. All we have to do is give up our integrity for this
That's
endeavor.
It. That's it.
it's a pretty cheap exchange, James. But I just, oh my goodness. It's just, to me, it's funny. I'm not saying he didn't bend the phone. I'm just saying he went way out of his way to make it seem like it was a big problem, and he got paid for it. Like, he made a tremendous amount of money doing that. And you know, and it's funny. Jeez, you wonder why companies like Samsung don't, you know, sponsor him. Makes you wonder if companies like Samsung didn't sponsor him. You know, and maybe it's possible that just a bunch of well-intentioned human beings happened to make a lot of money based on this, and nobody was, you know, selling their soul in order to you know, knock the king of the hill off the king of the hill for a minute. But it's fascinating. It's fascinating to watch the media just and how we as a culture deal with this. And the thing is, and why this is important to think about is because Apple needs to learn how to deal with this. Like, their trick all along has been, ignore it, it'll go away. That cancerous tumor is not deadly. Trust me, just ignore it, it'll go away. And it doesn't have a great track record. And that's kind of like an uncool joke, except Steve Jobs himself acknowledged that he has said he wished he had dealt with the cancer sooner instead of ignoring it. You're like, yeah, I think we all kind of wish that. But, you know, it's a long-term strategy of Apple in general to do that. And, you know, iOS 8.0.1, I got a feeling, I think they pulled it fast enough. I think people will forget about it, and 8.0.2 are there. You know, maybe they don't have to do anything more to deal with it. But I think they should make a big deal about, you know, chopping somebody's head off for it, especially if it's the dude that was also, you know, it's basically like two names of people that were in charge of basically bug testing Apple Maps. And one of the systemic problems that I heard that I thought was kind of interesting was that the idea that after the iPhone 4 got lost in the bar and Engadget bought the phone, Apple like super locked down on new hardware getting out early, where they used to do, you know, real world testing, and they made like fake cases and to kind of allow them to get some feedback with Apple employees. Now it's one of those things where nobody gets their hands on it outside of like locked laboratories and stuff, and one of the big questions is this a direct result of the fact that the guys that are building these things that need to have time to do this testing didn't get the phones until a few days before the launch of the very operating system that they have. You know, you talk about the fact that, yeah, these are really smart guys. There's a lot of talented guys. But if you don't have the time with the hardware to actually test them all out. And the thing is that, you know, it wasn't like every iPhone that had this got bricked, as far as I can tell. It was certain serial numbers of iPhone 6s, which means that it was probably some component that was sourced from multiple different, you know, sources and, you know, that was conflicting with the software. And if you don't have time to test everything, what are you supposed to do? Like, you do your best and just kind of cross your feet, you know, hope that you don't turn off the cellular antenna on the phone and lock everybody out. You know, and I don't know. That was a disaster, but really and truly, who is to blame? And how do you push out an update like that? Like, honestly, like, I wouldn't, you know, I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's an interesting time for Apple. You know, you talked that you I know you have you ever talked about your King of the Hill theory?
Maybe
on the show before. Do you wanna?
I'm trying to remember what it is.
So it was back in the day when Walmart was the number one company in the world. You came up with this theory that you described. It was the King of the Hill theory. It was basically the media loves, we love to hate the top company. Yep. And as soon as they're number two, nobody cares anymore. The best thing that ever happened to ExxonMobil was Apple passing them in market cap. Because as soon as that happened, ExxonMobil could go back to eradicating the environment completely from the face of the planet. And nobody cares because they're the number two company in the world by market cap. Well, what's the big deal? Walmart, best thing that ever happened to them because they're still making just as much money as they ever did. But now they don't have to deal with the headaches. Nobody cares anymore about the, you know, whether or not Walmart employees are unionized or not. That problem went away because they're not the King of the Hill. We only care about the King of the Hill. And Apple has been the King of the Hill for a pretty brief period of time, and they take a pounding every time they do anything. Because, you know, the truth is, you know, it's like one of the big lessons in media today is, you know, if you can ignore a problem for a couple of days, we have such short attention spans, we'll be on to the next one super fast, with a few exceptions. And that one big that one of the biggest exceptions is if you're number one, if you're the big political party, if you're the big politician, if you're the big company, if you're the big movie star, if you're on top, man, we're interested for a long time. Justin Bieber can't ignore stuff and just hope that people will forget, because every time it happens, we remember because he's number one. You know, Apple, every time it happens, we remember because they're number one. Every time, you know, and I don't know. It's just I think the best thing that could happen for Apple right now would get to be passed by Google. Because you want to know what would happen if Google became number one? All of a sudden, privacy would become important. And we'd be horrified by the fact that Google knows everything about us. And everybody would start to really learn about that and all the terrible things that Google's selling to the Chinese. And, you know.
Yeah, No, that's very true. We do just care about the top dog, and that's it. That's very, very true. It's weird, you know, because it doesn't seem fair. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's not fairness that they're going for. It's sales, eyeballs, clicks.
Clicks.
You know, so.
It's those articles whenever they talk. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it's one of those where, you know, but Apple's also fantastic at generating buzz, and so it's kind of like, you know, if you're going to be good at that, you kind of got to be good at the other side too. When you get the reaction,
it is a double-edged sword for them.
You know? And so, and they do push the line on things. You know, it is more bendable than other phones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they kind of give this air of the phone's perfect; it shouldn't bend.
Yeah.
You know, they never say that, but they sure imply it. And so, you know, when it does show a flaw, you know, they told me that it was incredible and amazing and better than bigger and, you know, and so what the heck is this? It's just a phone?
Yeah. It's just a phone. Oh, jeez. Well, it's not a phone if you got 8.0.1, but...
Right. But yeah, I just, you know, so they bring some of it on themselves. And I mean, and rightly so. They're like, yeah, we want the scrutiny because we think we can stand up to it. And then they can't always. Yeah. It's kind of crazy how it took about a week for it to all come together.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. It's are you saying you're down for my for our Apple Watch YouTube video? Because we should probably stop talking about it if we're going to do it.
No, I'd love it if people listen to our podcast and heard us scheming about it. That'd be cool.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. So that's my big question: is when the Apple Watch comes out, what is going to be the big hubbub that doesn't matter?
I'm guessing
that people are going to claim A, it's too expensive, but B, it causes a rash.
Why not? That's classic.
I mean, when you think about it, the Fitbit pulled a watch because of it. What's it called? It's all that hypoallergenic, like it's like supposed to be infused with all sorts of crazy chemicals that'll stop it from becoming, you know, a cesspool for viruses. Those things will cause allergic reactions in certain people. And I bet you get that. Cracked screens, that's the other thing. You gotta take a ball pin hammer to that screen the minute you get it. And
that's worth it, man.
People will, if you can, yeah, watch. Really simple and just like lightly
with it
tap
on
it,
your wrist. Then,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, just be like, look, go with this. Have the hammer there. Boom! That actually would be a really funny video, James. That's actually a pretty good idea.
That sounds horrible.
Oh my gosh. That's actually a great idea. Just make a really funny video about how it's really, really the Apple Watch. You could get like a fake one so that you're not actually breaking an Apple Watch, but just make a funny video of you breaking your own, you know, breaking your own wrist with trying to break it with That's actually a really good idea. Okay, you know what? I'm going to talk to my video friends. I'm going to see if we can't figure out how to do that, because that would be a great YouTube prank and just be like, you know, a lot of times these new Apple devices come out and we just want to, you know, there's always something wrong with it and we just want to show you the vulnerabilities of this thing. That's a pretty good idea. I'm going to write that down, James.
You're welcome.
Thank you. But yeah. It's been a week for them. It's a lot of phones sold.
I will say this.
So I've been personally, I tried to buy a Moto X Friday and today, but I want to get the 360 and the Moto X at the same time so I can use them. Because they, you know, they're just, you can't have one without the other, as the song goes. But turns out that if you were to lump all iPhones together as a single device category, which is not necessarily fair, but for the sake of the argument, the number 1, 2, and 3 most popular devices in the world right now are the iPhone at number 1, the Moto 360 at number 2, and the Moto X at number 3. I can't get any of them, even if I wanted to. Even with all my ins and outs and my people,
you just go to Target. They got them.
They have
Target.
What?
Moto X?
I don't know. They always have supply, and people don't ever think to go there.
It's actually not a terrible idea.
That's what I'm trying to remember who I was.
It's actually not. They might
listening to, but they're like, "Where'd you get your phone at? Target? Didn't even have to wait in line." It's like on launch day.
Yeah.
They get iPhones.
They got... Yeah. Interesting. I'll have to check this out. Shop all categories. I probably should do this after
probably.
The show.
But you got excited.
Yeah, exactly. Unlocked cell phones.
Yeah, you're going the unlocked route. I always forget about that.
Yeah. Paying the full price, man. It's expensive, but it's totally worth it.
Be flush with cash.
Exactly. What?
This is awesome.
this is awesome. They actually might...
Moto X.
Moto X, factory unlock cell phone. Is this...
What?
The Oh, wait, no, this is the cheap one. This is the older one.
The stupid one
that nobody wants.
Right.
Anyways. They don't have the 360, so it doesn't matter. But that being said, I have started jumbling around my pockets trying to figure out, because I've always gone keys, headphones on the left, phone and wall on the right, and I've switched the wallet sides. Nothing else. The phone's all by itself. Seeing how I like it. If it's that's a palatable pocket position for me. That way
so
I can fit the gigantic...
Pocket, you put your wallet in your front pocket?
Yes.
How thick is your wallet?
You still not very. It's this thick.
Okay.
But it's... I don't want to sit on it. It's bad for your back and stuff. And you get yourself a chiropractic adjustment. You don't need to get a chiropractic adjustment. I'm about to offend somebody in our audience, I'm sure. But I think chiropractic... This is weird. So talking about YouTube videos, that YouTube history, I never want anybody to know. I find YouTube videos of people getting their back cracked and like worked on by chiropractors really, really like relaxing.
I like but watching I've massage videos.
Oh my gosh! Right?
Oh, yes. I get relaxed just watching someone else do it. I'm like, oh
yeah,
that's
oh
nice.
Dude, it's great. My head gets all tingly. but the thing is, like watching them, like I'm absolutely convinced that, like, they're not doing anything. Like mostly, like you're just sort of like general, like I'm cracking all your bones and stuff. Like, yeah, it makes you feel really good because getting your bones cracked feels good because it like. It causes blood to rush there, and it makes you all tingly and stuff, and it feels good. But like literally, just crack your own neck. You get a kink in your neck, crack your own neck, and a day later you'll be fine. You don't have to pay a chiropractor to do that. Like I'm convinced of it. Being said, there are some chiropractors out there that are boss, man. They're legit medical people. They like take X-rays, they do the whole thing, and they will have actual bone problems that they fix using chiropractic. But they're always like, no, you don't do like you don't just crack somebody's back as though it like just for the fun of it. No, you like you go and you fix the one problem that's an actual problem, and then you know you're doing medicine. I don't know. Anyways, how did I get on this tangent? What was I trying to say?
I'm not sure anymore.
Oh, don't wear your pocket your wallet in your back pocket. It's bad for you. I don't know. You just sit on your wallet all the time.
Yeah, but. Where's here? What here? Wait 2 seconds.
Well, you and I have. Well, okay. You're going away.
All right, I got it. Here's my wallet.
I think you and I have the same. Yeah, see that? You know what's funny? You and I have the exact same wallet.
It's like the middle part of a wallet.
Yeah, we literally have the exact same wallet, and took out the middle bill.
Yeah, I've got. I've just got a couple cards and my ID, and that's it.
Yeah, you know what my problem is? I hold on to
so,
too many,
I mean,
like...
I don't even feel it. I don't feel like my back is off kilter. I guess that's what I'm saying. You're just weird. I was really waiting for you to reference the Seinfeld episode with George and his wallet.
I was getting there. I was on my way to making that joke.
Is you moved it from the pocket with your phone so you can get used to having a Gigantor phone.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's funny. I predicted this back in the day. And I feel like it should be illegal to make predictions about what you're going to do because you're the master of your own destiny. But I wanted to believe that I was going to stick with the smallest phone I could possibly get because I think that's a better solution. And I've totally talked myself into, like, I don't think I'm going to like it, James. This is what I'm telling myself. I don't think I'm going to like it. I don't think I'm going to like it at all. I think I'm going to like having a bigger phone. But it's only a year. It's only a year. I could try it for a year. I mean, maybe I will like it. I got to try it out. I got to at least give it one go. I don't know how I get myself into this.
At least try it
why
for a
I,
month.
Why do I do this? Exactly. And return it and get the smaller one if I want to.
Which will feel really small.
So, Yeah, it'll feel really small. I mean, how can you even see on something like that? It's terrible.
It doesn't seem possible to me.
Right? It's just, it's pathetic. Actually, I'll be told, I don't know. We'll see.
So, we'll keep on the Apple news. This is one of those episodes. I like it.
I know.
Apple, it's rumored that Beats Music is going away. It's kind of I like the back and forth between some of the tech blogs, because it was like TechCrunch came out and said Apple's killing Beats Music.
Done.
And TechCrunch, like I said that, and then Recode came out and was like, why would Apple plan to shut down Beats Music? They go, it's not. There's like, it's probably just not going to be called Beats Music anymore. It'll be called Apple Music or something like that. I don't know. They'll call it Apple Stream and Apple Notes. I can't think of anything cute that would go with an Apple. But anyways, you know, they're pretty sure that Apple will they'll figure out something to do with music, and I guess that bigger thought was, you know, do you think streaming's the answer? Do you think that'll solve everyone's angst? I don't know. I still buy music, but I'm a weirdo, I guess.
I know, me too. I buy music. It's hard to. I'll be honest. There's a bit of. I think I'm actually going to sign up for Spotify for at least a month. Just because I don't want to have to move all my music over to Google for my bout with the Moto X and, you know, Pandora, not Pandora, the other one, Spotify.
You haven't uploaded all your songs to the Google Cloud?
No, man, it takes like a year and a half.
No.
It's so long.
Just kind of let it run.
You're like, I'm aware. I actually think I do have music in the Google Cloud. Let's see here. Google.com/music, Music.
Yeah, I remember I did it like way back when they first introduced it. And it took a week and a half, something crazy like that. And then I just forgot about it. And then when I got my tablet, which lasted a couple weeks, it was sweet because I just opened up the app and boom, there was all my music. I was like, what? That's awesome.
Dude, I have a ton of music.
There you go. Problem solved. You're welcome.
I might have to. Let's see. How easy is it? Select from your computer. Do I go to music? How do you do that from a? Can you just do your entire library?
I don't understand.
Huh? Well, I don't even know how to. I wish there was like an easy way to do this. iTunes Media, music. Okay, whatever. This is dumb. I'll come back to it when I'm not in the middle of the show. I keep getting distracted today, man. There's all these stupid things I want to do. Anyways, but yeah, Pandora's pretty cool. I like Pandora. I might just go that way, James, and you know, it'll be 1 month, and then I'll cancel the service. Or I won't. Knowing me.
That's what they want.
I know. It's stupid. But yeah, I think it's funny. I hope they keep the Beats brand. I think it's good.
I think
they'll
do it for the headphones for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Keep iterating on the phone and on the headphones and keep the Beats brand around, and because it's, you know, it's sort of like YouTube or Instagram. It's, you know, it's sometimes good to have something that's very compatible and part of your engineering staff. It's just not the same thing, and you know, and it's not necessarily the same entity. And gives it a different feel, and it allows you to, you know, to hit a different market. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't dilute the rest of your brand. And, you know, but with the music service, it's an interesting question because, you know, with the music service, is there, you know, Beats headphones, Beats hardware already has a strong brand. But you know, Beats streaming service doesn't, and as much in my humble opinion,
numbers wise, it's not very big.
Yeah, and so the question is, you know, if they said we like it for the technology and that's it, is it good enough to bring it into iTunes Radio? Or do you want to make a new music solution for your overall Apple, you know, stuff and you know, come at it from that direction? Or, you know, I don't know. I kind of hope what they do is I kind of hope they keep the whole Beats thing and Apple and iTunes Radio and let them just, you know, compete in the furnace of competition within the company. That's, you know, that's kind of fun. It's cool when the when companies do that, and I think there's a certain amount of, you know, and whoever wins, you just kind of migrate them and you keep the brand of the winning team. And the Google Video, for, you know, that the product went away, but all the functionality just got absorbed by YouTube. And it just, they got rid of the URL is all. And actually, if I'm not mistaken, you see, that was what was great, is they got rid of it for like a day. And then now it's just the Google Video tab is, it's Google search for videos, and it's just, well, let's just search everything. They brought it back around. I don't know. Apple's big problem is, like, we talked about this last week, and I think it's something that we're going to have to keep coming back around to again and again and again. Music is great at selling everything. Music is great for selling everything but music. And the question is, you know, the value of music to Apple as part of their company is going to diminish over time, you know, as an actual separate income stream. But the ability to sell hardware with a great music service is really important. You know, it's, if you could actually, and it's funny, this is what I think that Apple could do. Apple is the type of company that could do this, and it would be, you know, really great for them. Give away Beats free as part of the hardware. You buy an iPhone, it gets Beats music.
Okay.
You get access to, you know, the problem is that you'd have to give up, they'd literally have to sit there and say, yeah, we're going to get rid of all of, you know, all of our value from selling music on iTunes. It's going to devastate that, but that's what's going to happen anyways. The question is who's going to get the best price? And I think what they can do is that they say, yeah, we're going to lose money on music. We're going to lose money from music we sold on iTunes. We're going to pay for a service for all of our users for the lifetime of the device. It's just what we're going to do. We have to, because otherwise people won't have a reason to buy our devices. And I think, you know, I think it's a bold move. It's a crazy move. I like it because it saved me money, kind of. I'd have to, you know, buy an iPhone. But I think, you know, I think that there's a real chance here for Apple to do something that would really, really, really mess with Google, you know, and really just take Microsoft off the table. And it's funny, you know, I realized that, yeah, you got to do everything well. You got to be an enterprise tool. You got to be a medical device tool. You got to be all sorts of different tools. But, you know, being a great medical device doesn't sell iPhones to anybody but doctors, and being a great enterprise tool doesn't sell any iPhones to anybody but, you know, guys who buy a bunch of iPhones. But that's not where most of their money comes from. You know, the people who buy iPhones, the people who make Apple most of their money, are the kind of people that say, well, yeah, but I like the music on the iPhone better. And you know, I wonder if they've got a really bold move that they're just sort of trying to shake out the details on. And I think making a lot of money on selling music is something that has a lifespan, and we're coming towards the end of it. And the sooner that they decide we're not going to make any more money on this, we're just going to kill that product, and we're going to stride boldly into the future of making money on our hardware like we've always done, the better off they'll be, I think. But you know, and it makes sense with the rest of what the company does. All their software is free now with the purchase of new hardware. You know, except for their, like, super advanced stuff. You know, their professional software.
Yeah, I wish they're getting further and further away from, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I could see them. Maybe. I don't know. Not everything's free. You know, to get an iCloud, more space is not free. Music Match is not free, but I could see it becoming part of that.
Yeah, just cheap. Yeah, you know what? And that's honestly, that's what I'm hoping for, because I already pay for it. And you know, $20 a year for all of your music, that'd be huge. That would be huge. That would be gigantic. Be devastating.
You think so?
I don't know if it'd be devastating. Okay. But it's one of those things where it's, you know, it would sell iPhones. It would allow them to keep moving as a holistic solution to your computational needs. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that, you know, really drags people along. It really does, you know. And the fact that they can lock it down to a single system, a single ecosystem, will really help them maintain users. You know, the fact that, oh, I got to figure out another music solution if I jump over to Android. Oh, jeez, that's tough. That's a bummer, you know.
That's true.
It's reality, man.
That's very true.
But, speaking of cool music shows, have you ever seen Cirque du Soleil?
Yeah, actually. In Las Vegas.
In real life? Nice. Pretty cool,
yeah.
Right?
It is.
All the dancing and whatnot. Well, the dudes at Cirque du Soleil, one of the reasons why I always feel like I have to pronounce it, like, really, really enunciate it, is because nobody ever does, and it always sounds like Cirque du Soleil. What is Cirque du Soleil? It's nothing. There's a du right in the middle. Cirque du Soleil. So anyways, they created this kind of cool tech art project. It stands in stark contrast to Microsoft's art project, where they built a big old cube and they allowed you to dance with somebody in the same room with you, as they so put it in their video. But what they did, Cirque du Soleil did, is they basically got a bunch of quadcopters and they dressed them up like lampshades. And then they put them onto lampposts. And it's this kind of cool video where it's this dude, this electrician working in his shop, and he accidentally, there's a short and things explode, and then all the lampshades come to life and he dances to the lampshades. And it's like, I'm watching it thinking, man, this is Disney right here. This is such a Disney thing to do. And he's like conducting them, and they're moving around and
that's
dancing.
Cool.
And they were talking. It was really cool. And like, when you watch like the How It Was Made video, you're like, yeah, they all kind of got each one has a personality. Like, they kind of move differently a little bit based on, like, you know, this one's more playful, this one's more grumpy, and they like have different colors and stuff. And you're kind of like, you know, I get that. It's like, I think you guys are being a little bit too sentimental, but this is kind of, I get it. I get where you're going. It's very cool. It's got a cool, cool feel to it. And what I like about it is it's actually, it's funny. I wasn't even going to bring up the Microsoft Cube, but it really just stands in such stark contrast to it. Basically, what Microsoft did was they created this, like, they created this acrylic cube that allows them to project from behind onto the screen. So they look like, so when you can see like what's being projected on it, and then they built Kinect at the base of it, so it's this four-sided viewing monitor basically with Kinect built into it. And then they created this software that allowed you to, you know, that would allow you to do different interactions, and they were trying to show like what you could do with it. And I you know, I've been a longtime advocate of the fact that I think Kinect's a very cool piece of hardware. It's capable of a lot of really awesome things, and Microsoft time and time and again manages to show it in its absolute worst light, and this is another case of that, where they showed up and like they literally said, we think that the technology is most exciting when technology meets art. You're like, did you actually just steal a Steve Jobs line for your okay? But they're like, they're dancing there, and like, and one of the guys was like, yeah, we've got this cool software that allows you to digitally dance with other people that are using it. And so like, you're dancing, and it's basically showing you like a digital projection of the person dancing on the other side of the cube. What is going on here? This is so dumb. Like, how is this cool at all? There's nothing beautiful about it. There's nothing magical about it. There's nothing like, you know, Arthur C. Clarke. Sufficiently advanced technology is indiscernible from magic. And that's kind of what the Cirque du Soleil thing does. You got YouTube videos being served up from a server from across the world that shows a video of like a synchronized different devices alive with performance of, you know, synchronized devices dancing around and floating and like and doing like a full-on Disney style scene that would they only would be able to do like in cartoon, and they're doing it live, and you're just like, oh, this is so cool. It's so like, man, this is the cross section of arts and technology, and it just it makes me excited for drones, because I think they're
sounds
awesome,
about right.
And but just you know, it's just really cool. It's neat, and Microsoft drives me nuts. They just drive me crazy because I think they have really good engineers that have really come up with really powerful systems, and they do just a terrible job of showing why they're actually cool. I just don't get it, James. I just don't get it.
We're going to link to this article on the website. Go to it, watch the video. It's kind of awesome.
I know.
It's very cool. Very well done. I like it. I'm sure there's music to it, too. I've just been afraid to turn on the volume.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's fine. I mean, it's just... It's very thematic and emotional.
Sounds about right.
It matches, but...
Yeah, it's cool. I guess if you know to look, you can see the copters in the top. But you gotta look. I mean... Having the lights next to him helps a lot. That's pretty sweet, man. Sorry that Microsoft bugs you.
It's like in football. Coach, you know, if you're being yelled at by the coach, that's a good thing. Because it means he still thinks there's potential. If he's not yelling at you, it means he thinks you're doing as good as you can. And that's not good. Yeah. Microsoft, I still believe that there's potential there. That's the reason I get so mad. I believe in you.
That's fair. That is very, very cool. So, like, I feel like this was forever ago.
It was.
Robinhood is that stock app that allows you to trade for zero commission. Still waiting. They just raised $13 million, which is kind of funny. They're like, yeah, we don't actually need it because there's only like a couple of us working on the app. But what it does is it shows that, well, we've got the money, we've got the backing, and it just helps to build trust. But I just wanted to let you know that I'm still waiting.
Yeah, right? Yeah, right? Me too. All right,
guys. I'm ready.
Anytime now.
That was it.
That's awesome. So I'll jump on to the next one then. I got two more stories.
Okay.
Which one do you want first?
The first one.
The mystery. Okay. just go in the order that they come in. Jeez. So this is a mystery. Ooh, it's actually like not a mystery. I think it's pretty obvious when you think about it. But Samsung announced that they are moving 500 engineers.
That's a lot.
Which is a lot of engineers. From its mobile division to a host of other groups, including in-home electronics, networking, and software. Company says it's shuffling people around to both boost its, quote, competitive edge in the IoT, or Internet of Things, and... increased synergies, which sounds like baloney. They're moving engineers away from their phones. It's interesting because I think what it means is they're kind of deciding that they need to be able to make money on things other than phones, which if you look at how much money they've made off of phones in the last year and a half, I get why they feel that way. 500 engineers cost a lot of money, and they're not making a lot of money. Yeah, I think it's just really interesting. I think what you're starting to see is, you know, Samsung's as a smart company. They do a lot of smart things. Sometimes they do some pretty nefarious things, but in general, they're just a well put together, effective company, and they're obviously moving in a direction where, you know, as much as they keep putting Tizen on hold and not launching a phone, I think they're acknowledging the problem that of Google and the Googleverse and the Androidverse right now, which is...
It's interesting. I interpreted it differently.
What was that?
When they first got started, they put all sorts of phones up against the wall to see what sticks. Now they know. We don't need as many engineers because now they'll focus on their 3 to 4 product lines.
Yeah, I think so.
Which I know is not as exciting as the one you wanted, because you kind of want them to fail. I get the feeling.
I kind of get that feeling from you. Yeah, well, I didn't like the Samsung Galaxy S3.
I kind of feel like you. How do I want to describe it to you? Let me think about this. It's kind of like the A's, where you're like, as long as they're not playing the Giants, sure, I'll root for them. The problem is, though, it's like they're always playing the Giants.
You know, the thing is, okay, for starters, and this is important, I realize it's kind of a size point, but you actually got the teams backwards.
Really?
Root for the A's?
The A's?
Yeah. It was the first home team game I ever, or home first pro sports game team I ever went and saw live. The A's. I've always been an A's fan. The Giants was a more recent inclusion, and I've always said, man, if they go to the World Series and it's Giants versus the A's, it's going to be the hardest decision I'll ever have to make. Literally ever. You're right. I'm just going to go over there and root for the A's. Partly because I like to be contrarian just for the fun of it. And I'm going to drive my friends nuts. that I betrayed the cause.
So the trick would be to try to get to the game. That would be impossible.
Oh, geez.
But awesome.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, I don't have that kind of money.
But the point being, so say, switch up the analogy, whatever. I just kind of feel like that's how you feel about, where you're like, they're not bad, but I would prefer to not see them win when they're playing my team, and they always play my team.
Part of it is they are not... I honestly feel that they're not the best Android phone, but they're the best Android marketing team on the face of the planet. And they've done great business because of it. And they also, you know... They were the first ones to decide, hey, you know, Apple's doing a pretty cool job. Let's just do what they're doing. You know, and, you know, they were the first company to just say, so sue us, you know, to Apple. And between having a great marketing team and the first ones to just blatantly take a lot of Apple's IP, whether you think it's fair for them to have it or not, I think is an open debate. I think, you know, some of the stuff that Apple copyrighted and Samsung took, yeah, that's fair. I get why you did that. You know, but, you know, simple fact is they've been convicted of copyright infringement, like, of Apple stuff. And not just to mention the fact that if you take one look at their, like, those products, it's crazy. And they made a lot of ground by not doing good engineering, but by copying their best competition, which... You know, that's a valid game plan. They're not a villain like, who am I trying to think of? You know, like BlackBerry. I don't root for the collapse of Samsung, but I think it'd be cool if Motorola or HTC, you know, got a little bit of a leg up in there and got a little, you know, got a couple punches in, kind of caught up. I think that'd be fun to watch. They're not my favorite Android company. I'll say that.
I can tell.
But I think that there is a growing problem. I really do believe that there's a growing problem. And I think Samsung, one of the things I like about Samsung is the fact that they are smart enough to realize that Android is a problem. And they're making it long term. It's a problem. It's not the final solution. And I guess, you know, the reality of it is you're always trying to make sure what's the next big thing, whatever. But I think there's an impending thing that everybody's trying to figure out how to deal with the fact that Apple takes so much of the profits. And Samsung, yeah, they're winning that battle the best, but they're not winning really. They're still ceding more and more of the market to their competitors, and more people are in the really profitable category that Samsung makes most of their money are switching to iPhones, especially now that's the big phone. And I think what they're doing is they're admitting the fact that we need to diversify. And we need to, you know, we need to have more than just the Galaxy Notes and the Galaxy S's. We got to have more than that in order to continue our dominance as a gigantic manufacturing company.
Fair enough. Yeah. You know. All right. I'll buy it.
Because Android is collapsing because Apple's the best ever. Well. I know that's what you wanted me to finish with. So the last story I wanted to talk about, and I left this to the end because I know not everybody cares about shell bugs, as they were. But so in Linux or Unix, whatever, there's different shells that you can build or that you can download and use. Shells being how you actually interface with the operating system, and the most famous of the devices is one called Bash and the Bash shell. There's a bug in it, and it's kind of a big bug. It's basically so there's different types of malicious attacks, right? Like Trojans are you download Photoshop and there's a virus built into it, and so you brought it in. And then a virus is something that like you download just malicious software and get it. And then there's malware, like, you know, which is kind of, it does like ads and stuff, or it's not necessarily a virus hiding itself, but it's just software that's bad for your computer. Malware is sort of an umbrella term. But then the most nefarious of your virus malware stuff is worms. And what they are is they're things that actually exploit internet connection sockets, and they're able to get into your device without any active participation on the user's part. They get in and they're able to implant software. And usually what they do is they go and they plug the hole. They tell your antivirus software that everything's fine, don't worry about it. And
how are you?
Exactly. And it's a great movie. And then what they do is they open up a permanent socket so that all they are is a portal. So now you're part of a botnet and other things, you know. Later on, people can decide what to use for your computer. This is the nature of a worm. They're devastating. They're bad news. Well, turns out one of the cool parts about Linux is that, and especially the Bash shell, is that up to this point, they've been pretty much impenetrable to those types of attacks. By and large, the Unix kernel and Linux in general is designed to be secure in this sort of a way. And they've done a really, really great job fundamentally when it was originally built to just be secure. And it's the reason why Linux is used in so many servers and the Bash shell is used in so many servers, and the reason why it's used in all of your Internet of Thing devices as a server, and it's the reason why, you know, Apple built OS X off of it, and it's the reason why it's everywhere and it's the most used operating system in the world, which, as I set that idea up, so they found a bug in it, and it's the sort of bug that makes worm attacks possible. They don't require any activity. They only require you to be able to basically overload a command. You put a command in, and the computer will execute the command without thinking about it. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't ask for permissions. It's just, if you tape the command, it'll execute it. And it's only supposed to execute a portion of it, but it won't. It will execute everything within that command. So you basically, if you start doing the wrong thing, it'll keep allowing you to do the wrong thing. And it's pretty terrible, unless you've got a firewall. If you've got a firewall, and then you need to actively give it permission, give other users permission to use that command, so you're protected. So anybody who's got a Linux-based PC, anybody who's got a Mac OS X, you're fine. No big deal. NBD. Problem is, if you have a server or if you have an Internet of Things device, which is effectively just a small server, these are designed to allow anybody to hit them, any, you know, to contact them anytime and take advantage of their power. It's allowed, it's designed to allow you to get into the bash shell within certain reason unrestricted, and this is basically a way to get around the restrictions that are built into Linux. So this is bad news for servers and for, yeah, it's actually one of those things that will affect us, will still be kind of hanging around there decades from now. Because what they're probably going to do, and I am fully into the weeds here. I don't sort of lost myself,
okay,
from a technical perspective about how you fix this. But from what I understand, it's possible to fix it proactively in the future to new versions of the bash shell can have it be fixed so that it's actually a bug in that it's not working the way that it's supposed to work. Whereas in OS or in Windows, a lot of times Windows is working exactly the way it's supposed to work. It's just not safe. And that was the problem, that's why Macs were perceived as so secure versus Windows for such a long time, because there were just a lot of, they had to plug all of the different holes that they had purposely built into it, whereas with Linux, it was built with all the holes plugged, and then you had to actively open the holes that you wanted. And it has to do with, it's the whole idea of, why do you have to root your iPhone? It's because it runs Unix, and the whole idea is you don't have root access. Well, you don't have root access to the server, so you can't do bad things. Well, this allows you to bypass that. And if you can bypass that on any Internet of Things device, on any server, well, that's a problem. So they're pushing out all these fixes. But even today, I was reading articles where, like, yeah, so all of your, like, web servers and stuff, all your big hosts out there, they pushed out fixes for it. And developers are hitting them back going, oh, BT dubs, it still doesn't work. I can still get in and get in with pretty simple attacks. So if you could go ahead and not let that happen, that'd be great. And it's the beginning of the whack-a-mole, really and truly. And the problem is that, you know, as, you know, we go on, that's just going to be kind of an ever-present problem. And where it's a real problem is, it's like, yeah, you can theoretically fix this on servers and continue to just chase it down until you put something else on it that doesn't have this problem. But, like, most of the routers out there in the world use the bash shell and, you know, the backbone of the internet, and those aren't really designed to be easily upgraded with their firmware, and they've got this vulnerability. So that's exciting. it's one of those ones where it's like, there's not much for us to do about it, especially if you got a Mac, you're safe, don't worry about it.
Done. Check.
You know, but your Mac is safe. Everything else that you use, your Hue light bulb, your Nest thermostat, your smart refrigerator, your incredibly dangerous smart oven,
Lock-a-tron.
Turn itself on. Yeah, unlock itself, because a hacker got into it. It's bash. Yeah, it's interesting. It's just definitely something, one of those, like, you know, this is the beginning of the hacking of the Internet of Things, and it's going to be a long-term problem for us, I feel.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know how to describe it, but there are pluses and minuses to the internet.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just wonder, are the minuses going to stack up enough that it's going to cause a problem?
Yes. To answer your question, I think what you're going to require are some fundamental rethinkings of how we kind of structure information on the internet. And the one thing I can say is how we process data and stuff.
there are solutions out there that are chasing down the problems, and they're complete rethinkings of how do we share data, how do we do protections, how do we do this sort of thing to make it way more difficult for somebody to get in and to, you know, because the one thing is it's one thing to have a vulnerability. It's another thing to have a vulnerability that opens up the rest of your world to vulnerabilities, you know, and how do you build things in a discrete way where they're all connected, but having access to one device doesn't give you access to the rest of the kingdom. You know, having access to one server doesn't give you access to everybody's credit card information. How do you do that? And how do you prevent that in the future? And the cool thing about computer science is there are tons of people studying how to make it incredibly difficult. And there are people that are spending their entire lives trying to figure out how to break it. It's a game of cat and mouse. And the thing is that it's like, you know, I think as time goes on, you'll see there will be a generation or a type of smart device that is very vulnerable. And what you'll really see is the days of the Lockatrons go away. You won't be able to sell a Lockatron, not as some no name. There's going to be a company who their entire thing is, we don't have very many products, but the products that we do have are incredibly great at not getting hacked. They're very, 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 very well made. We make locks, we make lights, that's it. And then other companies are going to take a look at that and say, all right, we'll chase that down. And it's going to be, you know, I think when I talk about these fundamental restructurings, it's kind of like the whole Bitcoin thing and the BitChain or whatever it's called, the keychain, the backbone of Bitcoin. You know, that's a technology that they're using for a cryptocurrency, but it can be applied to so many different things. And for security and reliability in a distributed network that allows certain parts of the network to stay safe and untouchable even if other parts are compromised, you know, that's powerful. And I think you're definitely going to see in the future that's how it's going to be. That's how it's going to be. I mean, I think in general, you know, it's like how do you know credit cards? It's getting to the point where everybody's credit card information has been stolen. You've had every one of your credit cards
stolen. Boom! Thank you, Target and Home Depot.
Yeah, you're welcome. And but have you ever had a cent of your money ever getting taken from you that you never got back?
No.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who has. Right? I don't know anybody who has. And my point is that, yeah, there are vulnerabilities here, but we find these other ways around it, you know. And I think we will. I think we'll survive. I think there's a lot of Y2K scare stuff going on where it's good news to make it seem really, really scary, which is why I bring it up. but it's, you know, we'll survive it. It's just, you know, I get excited from the soap opera of it because it's fascinating watching the good guys versus the bad guys, the red team versus the blue team, going back and forth, trying the black hats versus the white hats. You know, that's actually why I care about it, because it's crazy and fun to watch.
Right, right.
I don't think it's the doom of the internet.
Fair enough. Cool. I was curious, but that's good to know. I wonder what Tim Berners-Lee feels about it.
something probably a lot smarter than what I said.
Maybe.
Hopefully it's the same general theme, but...
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Hey, man, good show.
Thanks. You too.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let me go ahead and switch this audio up here so this will actually work properly. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We genuinely do appreciate it. My name is James Furlow. My nightmarish PR brother. What was it?
I'm being
I'm gonna go play Destiny.
That's right. My Destiny brother, gamertag next week in 4, is Destiny playing gamertag or whatever. That guy. His name, man, I botched that one.
You're having a hard time.
I am. Anyways, his name is Matthew Furlow, and assuming this plays properly, we will talk next time. Thank you.